And I'm Charlotte.
This is the Midnight Record.
The Midnight Record.
Zoom again.
Zoom edition part two.
It's been rough and dense.
It just took us an hour and a half to record a 45 minute audio, essentially. 50 minute audio. Super fun over here, but
not to mention I'm sweating. It's like the hottest day it's been all year.
Horrific. I mean, honestly, we're just gonna make lamb and it'll be fine.
We shall see. So today it's your episode, Charlotte.
Yes, ma'am, it is. And to wrap up Pride Month, I wanted to talk about a case that I had never heard of, but had quite a few layers to it. And I really wanted to focus on the relationship of these two people instead of totally just focusing on the crime as well. So this is the murders of Roxanne Ellis and Michelle Abdil.
Oh, I think I have heard of this one. I think I saw it when I was like researching for the last case that I did, or like looking up possible cases to do.
Mm-hmm. I never heard about this case until a few weeks ago. And when I was reading testimonies from their friends and family after they unfortunately passed away and were murdered, it was just so touching to me that I was like, I feel like I need to end with this one. Well, not end, because like we always talk about LGBTQ cases, but you know what I'm saying, at least for Pride Month. So let's get into it. In 1990, after enduring increasing homophobia in Colorado, Michelle Abdil and Roxanne Ellis moved from Colorado Springs, Colorado to Medford, Oregon. The couple met in Colorado, where Roxanne, divorced with two children, worked as an obstetrics nurse, and Michelle got a job in the same doctor's office, and they eventually became life partners. The couple started a successful property management business and were elected to the board of their church. They spent their free time restoring their old craftsman-style house, cooked elaborate Mexican meals from scratch, became a pair of doting grandmas to Roxanne's three-year-old granddaughter, who called Roxanne Grandma and Michelle Baba, which I just thought was very sweet. Sherry Garland, a close friend of the couple whose own two children were homosexual, made Hannah a t-shirt playing off the booklet often waved around by anti-gay groups, quote, "Heather has two mommies," unquote. The t-shirt Hannah wears says, "Hannah has two grandmas," which I just thought was very sweet. So Medford has been described as a town of grassy hills dotted with barns, where a shopping mall with a Sears was like the biggest draw, and downtown was only five blocks long. They originally moved from Colorado Springs because they felt it was becoming increasingly hostile towards gays. They also worked as activists, fighting two Oregon state ballot initiatives in 1992 and 1993. Measure 9 intended to amend the state constitution to declare homosexuality abnormal, wrong, unnatural, and perverse, and Measure 19 intended to restrict library access for materials related to homosexuality. That initiative would have amended Oregon's constitution to forbid any civil rights protection based on sexual orientation. It also grouped homosexuality in with pedophilia, which you and I both know, and most of our listeners, I hope, certainly know, that pedophilia and homosexuality are not the same thing. They are very different.
Not even close.
The Los Angeles Times reported that the women, quote, gave lectures at the schools on lesbian lifestyles and appeared on TV on behalf of local gay rights causes. According to lesbian activist Donna Redwing, Roxanne and Michelle also helped care for a couple of men who were dying of AIDS, bringing them meals, changing their bedpans, adjusting IVs, and working in their yard. They also slipped into a friendly network of gay men and lesbians from places like Los Angeles and San Francisco, who found that, like much of the rest of America, they wanted a safe and comfortable place in which to grow old. Quote, I spent a lot of time with that family and I never heard any one of them say anything negative. It was always just a whole lot of love, said Rhonda Loftless, a transplant from Long Beach and a friend of Roxanne and Michelle's. They complimented each other, their personalities. This is how I'm going to memorialize them. Michelle was a flame that burns and Roxanne was the candle that supported her and gave her this energy and fuel to shine. At the time of their murders, Roxanne and Michelle had been together for 12 years. So honestly, like very wholesome people. They are trying to help their fellow members of the LGBTQ plus community, as well as this community in Medford that they were trying to just be a part of in general. I did read somewhere that Medford was sort of like the place where a lot of people from the LGBTQ plus community in San Francisco, Los Angeles, like Northern, like in California in general, wanted to end up, or like that part of the country because of how quiet it was. And they were sort of the one of the first ones to be there and say, hey, we're gay. We're here to like teach you about what that means if you want it. Yeah. And they were really big activists. And I really do love that quote where it says that Michelle was the flame and then Roxanne was the candle, because they, you can't have a, like, I don't know, because a candle doesn't work without a flame, and then a flame can't, it needs a candle. You know, like they just really complimented each other, which I don't know, it was very touching to me. Okay, we'll move on. On December 4th of 1995, Roxanne, who was 53 at the time, went to an appointment with 27-year-old Robert Acremant to show him an apartment. Police believe the appointment was made earlier that day and she had contacted him around 11 a.m. Roxanne allegedly called her daughter Lori at 4 p.m. to tell her she was going shopping. Michelle, 42, left the office around 5 p.m. saying that she was leaving to help Roxanne jumpstart her car after receiving a call that the car would not start. Later, Roxanne's daughter, Lori, drove over to the apartment complex where her mother was going to show the apartment and saw her mom's pickup. She said the pickup pulled away from her when she tried to follow it, so somebody was in the car. Robert lured the couple to a Northeast Medford duplex apartment where he tied and gagged them with duct tape. He shot them each twice in the head after forcing them to lie in the back of a pickup truck, which was discovered with the bodies in a nearby parking lot 3 days later. Michelle and Roxanne were not seen again until their bodies were discovered in the back of Roxanne's pickup truck after a cable TV worker reported the vehicle to the police. Both women, like I said, have been bound and gagged and shot in the head, and their bodies were wrapped in drapes and covered in cardboard boxes.
It's awful.
Like, also just like such a I don't know, like a disrespectful way to leave a body.
Yeah,
sort of like, well, like it is because it's out in the open, but also in a way, I guess, like he had enough care about them to cover them up. I don't really understand the whole covering up thing, but
trying not to look at what he did or something. I don't know.
Maybe he's ashamed, or maybe he didn't want any, you know, maybe he didn't want just like a regular passerby. See, I don't know. Maybe he didn't want them to be found, or maybe he wanted more time for them to be found. It's very unclear. So the discovery of the bodies caused concern in the local gay community. The couple's activism on gay rights issues and records of an earlier threat against them aroused suspicion that they'd fallen victim to a hate crime. The case of Roxanne and Michelle prompted gay organizations to demand a Justice Department inquiry into the link between hate crimes and anti-gay ballot initiatives, and also has drawn a flood of financial contributions from around the county into Medford, where the couple's friends were hoping to build a gay community center. again, like they were trying to uplift the community. It's not like wrong place, wrong time. You know, they had any shading deal. I mean, not saying that that gives anyone an excuse either to be killed, right? But it is, I don't know. I feel like to me, it's pretty black and white on like what a hate crime is. Just like when I talked about Paul Broussard a few weeks ago, even though, oh my gosh, what was his name? John Busio said that he's like, oh, well, I don't have anything against gay people. It's like, no, but like you do though, because you went to an area where you knew that gay people would be and killed them.
Right.
Or beat the shit out of them and then killed them. Yeah. So the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force wrote the Attorney General Janet Reno to request that the United States Department of Justice assist local authorities in their investigation. The letter cited the Justice Department's guidelines, which said a crime motivated by bias in whole or in part should be considered a hate crime, which I absolutely agree with 100%. The Portland-based Coalition for Human Dignity has tracked a number of ultra-conservative racist groups operating in the Medford area, including a chapter of the neo-Nazi Aryan Nations, Christian Identity, and the Ku Klux Klan, and two citizens' militias. So even though all these people went to this area to have this like wholesome retirement or golden years or anything, there were a lot of people there who did not want LGBTQ plus people there, clearly. The Oregon Citizens Alliance, which is a powerful conservative group that sponsored the two previous anti-gay rights bills initiatives that I talked about a little bit earlier, and was collecting signatures for a third at the time of their deaths, had said it had no connections to any violence against homosexuals. So even though they were actively trying to take away rights of gay people and LGBTQ plus people, they were like, well, but we don't have anything to do with the violence against homosexuals. We just don't want them there. We just don't want them here. Like, we don't want them to have rights, but we didn't kill them. It's like, okay.
But you're die, but they're also not human.
Exactly. It's like you're still spreading a narrative that they're not human or that they're lesser than, so that their deaths could potentially mean less, you know, which just adds the fire of hate, which is awful. Director Lon Labin said sentiment in Oregon is even stronger now in favor of legislation of prohibiting special legal prosecutions based on sexual orientation. And he at the time was the director of the Oregon Citizens Alliance. The nature of the crime and the couple's activism led to widespread publicity about the case. Police publicized a composite sketch of the suspect based on a description of a witness who had seen a man, Robert, park Roxanne's truck and walk away. The media coverage of the murders reached Robert's mother, who had moved to Medford 3 weeks earlier with her son. Believing her son had committed the murders, like she saw the composite sketch, heard about what happened, she called the police tip line and told the police of her suspicion based on her son's behavior and his resemblance to the composite sketch, which honestly, good for her. Like, good for her. I'm glad that she stepped up to the plate for sure and was like, that looks like my kid. And I know he's my kid.
She must have been a little off.
Well, we'll get into that in a moment. Trust and believe. So she showed police the labels of cardboard boxes used during her move to Medford with Robert, and police matched the address labels to those on the boxes used to cover the women's bodies, which I find it interesting that like she, which again, it's some, I'm sure there's somewhere in, I mean, there's some miscarriage of justice going on here, but the fact that she had to show them that it was her address and they didn't just automatically look up, like that would be one of the first things that I would think that the police right. would do.
Yeah, you would think.
She told the Oregonian Quote, I call the police because I have to look God in the face. I will do anything in my power to make sure other people aren't hurt. But right now he's sick, unquote. Police contacted California authorities and found that Robert was under investigation for an October 3rd disappearance of one of his friends. And he was tracked down to a Stockton motel room, arrested on December 13th of 1995. Upon his arrest, Robert confessed to the murders of Roxanne and Michelle, claiming that his motive was robbery. According to Robert, after they refused his demand to write checks made out to him from their business account, he shot both women in the back of their head, execution style, having bound and gagged them with duct tape and forced them to lie down in the back of Roxanne's pickup truck. Robert also confessed to the killing of Scott George of Visalia, California on October 3rd of 1995 and dumping his body down a mine shaft located outside of his father's ranch near Stockton. I know, right? I'm like, this guy, come on. On December 18th of 1995, after Robert told his father where he had disposed of the body, police discovered Scott's remains at the bottom of the abandoned mine shaft in Calaveras County, California. Also, authorities in Tulare County believe Robert also burst into the home of a 20-year-old family friend the day before his arrest, handcuffing her, holding her at gunpoint, and demanding money. So obviously, this man is like not mentally well. But there is also an ulterior motive of why he wants money. And it, like, when I first read it, it threw me out of left field, but I was like, that also checks out at the same time. Sure. Robert served in the Air Force and earned a master's degree in business administration from San Francisco's Golden Gate University in half the time it usually required. Later, he worked as a district operations manager at a roadway trucking service in Los Angeles. Robert left his job at Roadway Trucking to start his own software business. He became frustrated by the failure of his software company and his own failure to find a job and achieve financial security. His money frustrations were compounded by depression when he was rejected by a Las Vegas stripper named Alla Korsakova, whose stage name was Ecstasy, whom he considered to be his girlfriend because he did not have enough money to visit her.
Okay.
Like, can we please be more textbook? Could we be more textbook, my guy? Like, please, I don't know. Do something a little bit more interesting, I suppose. Like, don't give all your money to a stripper. I mean, strippers deserve all the money. Get that coin, girl. But don't make people murder for you.
I can guarantee you that Ecstasy did not care that much about Robert.
Yeah, I would also say so. The same. Yes, 100%. So, okay, there are two main motives for him killing Roxanne and Michelle. The first one is obviously robbery. Robert's statements about his motive have shifted over time. He said that his intention was to rob Roxanne and Michelle. Media reports said the robbery scheme was part of a plan to get enough money to win back Alla, aka Ecstasy. Yeah. However, the district attorney, However, the district attorney in the case noted that some of the evidence undermines robbery as the only motive, as Robert left the victims' purses, wallets, jewelry, cell phones, and money at the scene.
Yes, it makes sense.
When Roxanne's daughter arrived at the complex, she and Michelle's brother, Dan, spotted Michelle's unlocked vehicle at the scene with her purse in plain view, which prompted them to call the police. Like, if it really was a robbery, like, I don't care if you wanted checks or what. Like, if you couldn't, I don't know. I would just think if you couldn't get what you wanted to originally get and you still killed these people, why didn't you just grab all the jewelry and things anyway? Like, I just don't, why would you just leave it all there?
Exactly.
So the second motive, which I definitely subscribe to a little bit more, is homophobia. Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah, go figure. In August of 1996, Robert wrote a letter to his hometown newspaper, the Stockton Record, stating that he had intended to rob Roxanne and Michelle and that knowing they were lesbians, it made it easier to kill them. He also wrote that he killed George Scott, who was reportedly bisexual, because he had made a pass at him. Robert also claimed to be a victim of childhood sexual abuse. So he was like, I hate gay people, but it's because I too am a victim. And people are like, I'm sorry, you're a victim. That also doesn't give you a right to like go kill other people.
Not even a little bit.
Like, why you do that though? Please, please don't. If 1 + 1 = 2 and 2 + 2 = 4, what the fuck is this? It's like, does not compute. In his 3-page letter, Robert claimed he invented the robbery motive because he feared reactions from inmates who might learn that his murders were hate crimes against bisexuals and homosexuals. In an interview with the Stockton Record from his cell jail, Robert said he had no problem with bisexual women, but had no compassion for lesbians, bisexual, or gay men.
Right.
I personally think it's because he can still fetishize bisexual women.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I mean, we still see it a lot today, right? Like, so many, I can't tell you how many times I've been around, honestly, cis men, cis straight men, and they have said something like, oh, so like someone will bring up that somebody's bisexual or something. And I'm like, oh, well, like, are you sure? Or maybe she just hasn't found the right man. It's like, or, you know, or whatever. And it's like, what? Like, where? Huh?
They think they like still have a chance.
Right. And obviously I do not associate with these people ever. Cause I'm like, that's red flag. I'm out. Bye. Like, gotta go. Gotta skedaddle. So he said to the Stockton Record, quote, I don't care for lesbians. I couldn't help but think that she's 54-year-old and has been dating that woman for 12 years. Isn't that sick? That's someone's grandma, for God's sake. Can you imagine my grandma a lesbian with another woman? I couldn't believe it. It crossed my mind several times. Lesbo grandma. That's what a thing, huh? Unquote. Which I'm like, if you can imagine your grandma being with your grandpa, then why... why is it so different if she's in a same-sex relationship? Interviews and media reports confirm that Robert knew that the women were lesbians. He had previous contact with Roxanne 2 weeks before the murders when he had been shown the same apartment where he met Roxanne on December 4th, 1995. He also acknowledged that he asked Roxanne, whom he spent the most time with out of the two victims, if she was a lesbian, and she said that she and her partner were lesbians. Interviews indicated that he may have spent some of the time before Michelle's arrival asking Roxanne about details of their life. In an interview with the Oregonian, he said it made him sick to his stomach to learn that she was someone's grandma. In an interview with the San Francisco Examiner, he revealed that Michelle was 54 years old and that she and Roxanne had been together for 12 years. Robert also told the Oregonian that there was a common thread between Roxanne and Michelle's murders and that of Scott George. I may have called him George Scott at one point earlier. I'm really sorry. When people have two first names as their full name, I mix them up sometimes. I'm only human, you know, I simply can't be perfect. Robert later recanted his earlier claim to have killed Roxanne and Michelle because of their sexual orientation. Honestly, I think probably because he got some backlash, to be honest, probably in jail. And that's some BS. Like, no, you said it. Stick to your guns now. You got to stick to your guns. Mm-hmm. At least that's my thought. He attributed his murders of Roxanne and Michelle, as well as Scott, to, quote, to a, quote, sudden urge, claiming that he had felt like killing Roxanne and Michelle until he had bound and gagged them and forced them to lie down in the back of Roxanne's truck, unquote. He also claimed to have killed Scott because he wanted to test the silencer he had just built for his handgun. So his story is all over the place. I mean, again, that's why I think that, in my personal opinion, his motive was based in homophobia.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about Alla Koskova a little bit, aka Ecstasy. So at Robert's trial in 2007, 33-year-old Alla, an immigrant from Russia, testified she had indeed cut off their relationship, which began in April of 1995 when she was 20 or 21 years old, in August of that same year. She confirmed that they had built a relationship, but said it was purely financial in nature as far as she was concerned. So she had no emotional attachment to him at all.
As I suspected.
100%. Alice said that he spent up to $3,000 a weekend on her at the club where she danced and bought her two pairs of diamond earrings and occasionally took her out to dinner. She stated that they never had sex. Their relationship ended when the unemployed Robert spent his savings in retirement fund and maxed out all of his credit cards. When he called her and claimed that a man in New York City had stolen his money and that he had none left, Alice said she changed her number and severed ties with him, which I'm like, cold, girl, cold. Just a tad cold. Robert surfaced again in Alla's life when he returned to Las Vegas after the murders of Roxanne and Michelle. He spent $5,000 from the sale of his car paying women to dance for her, which she said was a fantasy of his. After taking her to dinner on December 10th, Alla said that Robert pulled out a gun and a stun gun as they sat in her truck and told her he had killed three people, two just last week. He unscrewed the silencer on the gun and showed her the blood that was inside of it. Later, Alla told a police officer, a regular customer at the club, what Robert told her about the murders, but said he didn't take her seriously. Afterwards, she told Robert they were through. And after his arrest, however, the television program Inside Edition paid for Alla to visit Robert in a county jail for, in Jackson County Jail, for which she told him this was for like the final time that she would see him. Alla would return to television in September of 2005 as Alla Wartenberg, a successful businesswoman and contestant during the second season of the television show The Apprentice.
What? Nuh-uh.
Uh-huh. Starring Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
She was there. I think season two was Omarosa's season as well.
I don't remember, but I do remember that season, like Omarosa.
I was like way too young to watch it. So like, I was not invested at all. All right. So upon his arrest, Robert declared that he wished to be executed by lethal injection. By that time, Oregon hadn't executed an inmate in over 30 years. 1 month later, he entered a not guilty plea and his lawyers filed motions to overturn Oregon's death penalty. Quote, he was definitely one of the most evil people we've ever dealt with, said Tim Doney, the lead Medford police investigator in the case and the current police chief in Talent. Tim said Robert spoke almost jovially about how he killed the women and that he plotted from his Jackson County jail cell to kill his father after learning his parents helped lead police to his capture in California, which I find it interesting that he wants to go after his dad when his mom was the one who turned him in. Leaders of Medford's gay community said, quote, we know the killer enacted a deliberate, calculated process of entrapment. We know the killer wanted both victims. We know that money and credit cards were left at the scene. We know that the murderer killed the victims execution style, bound their hands and feet, gagged and blindfolded before being shot twice in the head at close range. We want our suspicions to be addressed and we want our concerns to be laid to rest so we can move on in peace, unquote. On September 11th of 1996, Robert pled guilty to the murders of Roxanne and Michelle. On October 27th, 1997, an Oregon jury sentenced Robert to death by lethal injection for the murders of Roxanne Ellis and Michelle Updale. He was the first ever death row inmate from Jackson County. And like I said just a minute ago, the state of Oregon hadn't executed anybody in over 30 years.
Right.
On March 15th, 2005, Oregon's High Court upheld Robert's death sentence. In February of 2011, because death row literally takes forever, An Oregon court declared Robert so delusional that he could not assist in his death sentence appeal, and his sentence was reduced to life without parole. He died of natural causes in prison on October 16th of 2018. He also faced a death sentence in California for killing Scott George. So he did die. He is dead.
Won't miss you.
Definitely won't. And neither will a lot of other people. So the aftermath of everything that went down, I just wanted to touch on a couple of things. On October 9th, 1996, an LGBT advocacy and education center opened in Ashland, named the Abdil Ellis Lambda Community Center in honor of the murdered pair. The Abdil Ellis Lambda Community Center closed in August of 2010. So it was open for 14 years. In April of 2001, Senator Gordon H. Smith cited the murders when arguing in the U.S. Senate on behalf of hate crimes provision proposed for inclusion in the Local Law Enforcement Act of 2001. Robert Bray, spokesman for the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force in San Francisco and a friend of Roxanne and Michelle's, said that the case reflects the kind of problems typical in small conservative towns. When the two women moved to Medford, quote, "I remember wondering why they would do something like that, move to a place like Medford. But I realized they appreciated those same small town values that everyone else does. A close-knit community, everyone takes care of each other, etc. Until the time comes when we know that gay people can live safely in small towns, our souls will never rest easily." And like I said, Robert was found dead in his death row cell on Friday, October 26, 2018. And the cause is under investigation. And with all that to be said, those are the murders of Roxanne Ellis and Michelle Abdil.
Wow. Very sad. Yeah.
Very sad. Yeah. So let's do our palate cleansers, because we definitely need one this week. Miss Ray, would you like to tell? Why don't you tell us what your palate cleanser is this week?
Sure. So I've been watching the new season of Love on the Spectrum. They did a U.S. version. So it's the first season of the U.S. version. It's about people on levels of the autism spectrum going on dates and kind of like figuring out the dating world. It's very cute. They had two seasons of the U.K. version that I really enjoyed, and just finished up I just finished watching the season one. I binged it. But yeah, it's just very cute, very feel good. Highly recommend. It's on Netflix.
Yes. I've heard great things about that show. So I'm glad that they have a second season and like a US one too out. My recommendation for this week is Under the Banner of Heaven. It is new-ish on FX. Of course, it stars Daddy Andrew Garfield. Love him. He's so talented. But it is very fascinating because it has to deal with murders in Utah and in the Mormon community, and how the lead character, Andrew Garfield, like deals with his own religious thoughts, opinions, and ideas while investigating this murder and all that stuff. And it's just like very well written, beautifully shot. I mean, it's just awesome. So 10 out of 10 would recommend. Well, Miss Ray, would you like to tell the good people where they can find us?
Absolutely. At The Midnight Record on TikTok and Instagram, at TMR Pod on Twitter, and themidnightrecord@gmail.com.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all of your favorite podcast listening platforms. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. It lets us know that we're still providing you with the content that you want to be provided with. And thank you so much for the support. But thank you to our Patreons. I promise we're going to shout you out next week. Deepest apologies. We're just running out of time on this Zoom call. So anyway, I guess until next time.
I'll see you at midnight.
I'll see you at midnight.
Less than a minute remaining.
With no time constraints. Okay, bye.